All right, well, thank you then, Alan, if you would.
I don't know if that's good or bad. It's the graveyard shift on day one.
It is.
Okay. So, agenda item three, was scheduled for tomorrow morning. If you can recall, last year we discussed research more generally at the Advisory Council. And I got some very helpful input. We broke out into breakout sessions, and in fact, this paper reflects a lot of the feedback that we actually got from that session. We're going to discuss it at the trustees in January, but we ended up deferring the full discussion of that until April. But I thought, well, it's a good opportunity actually to see what messages we're giving to the trustees, and also to get last chance to get some input before we actually go to the trustees with a final paper. So what I'm going to do is I'm hoping that you've only got the one breakout session in the whole of this this meeting, that this is a good chance to ask questions as opposed to me talking for 30 minutes, which I'm sure you'd be much happier to do at the end of a day than otherwise. So let me just briefly recap. The trustees in their review decided that we should establish what they call a research capability, and it should draw on internal, external, intellectual resources. Essentially, we want to increase our research capacity. So what we did is we put together a research committee and develop a plan, a good strategic plan for doing that. And essentially, I think if you read on pages 2 and 3, we've tried to summarise the main thrust of what we're doing. There are three things we want to do to increase our research capability. Okay. And by the way, I'll just recap on one thing. I remember last time when we talked about research, of course, the first thing people said was, what do you mean by research? And it was almost like the first point of discussion. It's not just about academic research that uses statistical analysis or empirical analysis based on share prices versus some sort of accounting numbers, for example. It's research that helps inform us, whether that be behavioural types of research, whether it be simple thought pieces, theoretical work, for example. There are lots of different ways that people do work that can actually help feed into our thinking. We think that the best way to achieve a capability is by, first of all, increasing awareness, and that's awareness often within the ISB. I want to mention a couple of risks that go with that in a minute or two. The second is by increasing the availability of our internal resources. What we discovered when we actually did a bit of an inventory around the ISB and its staff is that we are actually drawing on a huge range of resources, but it's individuals often have access or are reading particular types of things. We're very conscious of the fact that it's important we don't, I'll use the word, steal research, and that we've got to make sure that when we do use research, we get it legitimately. So we have to be very careful, because it's quite expensive often getting access to a lot of different resources. But we have got some very well-networked people who've got some excellent resources available to them, often because people are actually willing to provide us with access to those resources, their internal data sets, for example. So we think that rather than, if anything, the best thing to do is to try to work out a good way to manage that. You'll see we talk about a research librarian in there. The third, I think, which is probably the most visible that people will see, is by building our research network. And in particular, there'll be two things I think will help with our profile. One is by getting a much better research web page on our site. And I'll talk very briefly in a minute or two about the types of information we'll put on the site. Most of it's about making researchers out there aware of what we're doing, because one of the biggest problems we have at the moment is that you know, we always joke the saying, it takes us a long time to write a standard. It takes academics often longer to write research papers. They don't work to the same rigorous deadlines that we work to. And often they actually will need 3 or 4 years of good lead time to do good research because of the data availability and things like that. So it's very important that they are given as much warning as possible about things that might be interesting to us if they want to undertake some research that's helpful. And the last thing, and I'm going to mention a couple of very specific things, creating special events that we host that demonstrate that we're interested in work that others have been doing and research, and help create the real perception that we are thought leaders in this. So let me go back to a little bit about research capability and why are we doing this? Part of this is that, you know, we're in a world where we continually have to justify the decisions we make. I think we have, it's been demonstrated to us in the last several years that people are more demanding of the ISB when we produce standards. It's not good enough to simply produce a standard and say that it's consistent with a framework. That's very important. But they often want to see what sort of evidence we've got to justify those decisions. And that could actually be, in some cases, the weight of academic evidence to show that this particular type of decision is better than another one. In other cases, it's more, I would say, informal evidence in a sense. Some of the field work that we do, some of the testing that we do, some of the surveys. So you're building a bulk of evidence that helps support the decision making that you're undertaking. So people are more demanding. Things like, you'll see in paragraph 11, I mentioned the Interpretations Committee. We have the idea of the Interpretations Committee is it's supposed to solve problems. In other words, how widely spread is that particular problem? So far, historically, we've tended to think about those in fairly anecdotal ways. We've asked the people around the table for input. What we're trying to do is be more systematic so that if we do put some resources into solving a problem, we've got some evidence that, in fact, there is a problem out there. Now, for those who've heard me before when we developed the agenda consultation, we're very quick to come up with solutions, but the first thing we should do is establish that there is, in fact, a problem that needs to be fixed. So that's, again, evidence. You know, I call it research because we're actually going and asking people to provide us with examples of the types of problems that the Interpretations Committee is being asked to solve. I have seen relatively recently cases where the Interpretations Committee has been asked to look at things at the behest of either staff or the Interpretations Committee itself without looking outside the window to try and find examples of practice where it's where there's some divergence is either developing or has developed. So we need to, as I say, justify what we're doing, and all the proposals here are trying to take all the good work that I think currently happens amongst them is performed by the ISB staff, but making sure it's more robust and more consistent across a wider range of projects and documented more carefully so that people have actually got that evidence base they can see. It's not mentioned in here, but my PA at the moment is putting together the dates for the first of the meetings of the effect analysis committee that we've established. And so there's, again, another example of us looking at how we can collect evidence and then make sure that we distill that or convey it out to the standard-setting community so you can see how we assess the likely effects of a particular standard. Again, more evidence that about why we've made the right, what we think are the right decisions. There's also an aspect of thought leadership. You'll recall when we talked about it last time, we talked about the blue sky thinking. Nobody wants us to do that. They want us to write standards and not actually sit there and think about bigger picture things. But we do actually think there are going to be situations where we want to demonstrate that we are thinking from within. And there might be some things, for example, we're going to talk about XBRL tomorrow, and there's some really basic questions in XBRL about when you've got principle-based standards and principle-based disclosures, how providing some sort of structure around them with XBRL, how those things interrelate. Is it important to tell a story in your financial statements? That's the disclosure story. How does that relate to XBRL, which tends to be far more structured and put far more, I won't say discipline, but certainly more structure around particular numbers? There's some really interesting debates that perhaps should be had. We can encourage people to have those debates to write papers. In fact, it's what we do. Now and again, we think it's appropriate for us to take the lead and actually write some of those papers as well. But that will be dependent on resources, because obviously we've got to write standards as well. So we've developed a plan, and the idea that their plan is it is dependent on two things. One is we want to make sure when we do this, we do it properly, and the other is that we've got to make sure that we've got the resources to back up our plan when we actually do step ahead with it, and I'll mention those as we go as well. First is staff capabilities. We're already started to look at more internal training for our staff. We are not trying to make every single one of our staff members capable of reading an academic paper or going and searching for them. We just want them to be more aware of what sort of academic research there is. And if I can mention, there's sort of two types of mistake we can make. One is if we are not aware at all of research, if we'd known about it, we would have actually recommended and our board would have made different decisions at the table, then we've probably failed. In other words, if we've missed something that is really persuasive, we've probably failed. I'm actually more worried about the flip side of that, and that is where you find some research and you've got one of our staff members goes hunting around on a website and finds something, reads the abstract. The abstract tells them this is what the answer is. They've got no idea about the quality of what's going on behind the scenes in terms of the research, and they're persuaded by something like a very bad piece of research. So it's very important for us to protect our staff from making those errors as well. So that's sort of almost a type one, type two error. So we're not trying to, as I say, lift everybody into academic readership. We're going to protect people by getting some people in to advise us, and that's the use of academic fellows when the time's right. And we also already do that. We've got people like Ann Tarker, who's has been involved with us and helping us with a post-fermentation review, who can actually protect us a little bit in terms of making sure that when we read research, that we might ask people for their input as well, independent input. So we are going to get extra people in. Research fellowships is one of the most powerful ways we think we can do that. We already have education fellows, so people come in and write case studies for us. But we think there's a good, I'll say, market or a group of people who are willing to come in and work with us on our research and help us with things like post-fermentation reviews. The FASB has a program now. We'd have a slightly different program, probably focused around specific activities like post-fermentation reviews. What we'd like to do is sort of get up and running with around about two research fellows, but that will depend on resources. If we've got existing vacancies or positions that within our technical, we might think about using those to try and fill those positions as well. But the other thing we have to remember is that visiting academics, people are looking to go on leave. It can often take, they plan 2 to 3 years out often in terms of their sabbaticals, and so you can't just go and grab somebody tomorrow to fill one of these positions. So we're realistic about that as well. So also in the paper, we go towards the end of the paper, on page 7, we talk a little bit about the resources we have. And part of documenting this is to make people aware that we do have access to some pretty good resources. Most people in the academic community know what SSRN is, the Social Sciences Research Network. So it's a free network, but they tend to be working papers, so you've got to be a bit careful about reading some of those results because they're quite early on. They're also, I could pull down the number, there are literally hundreds of thousands of papers. And so you start searching for these things and you just get, you know, you get 10,000 papers showing up on one of your hits, and it's really hard for somebody to find everything. But we also have access to EBSCO. We pay for in company reporting, so we do pay and acquire some good professional and academic journals, and we have staff who use that. We did a survey internally because we like to have our own internal evidence, and we found that the use of EBSCO was the number of searches per person who's actively using it was very high. It's just the number of people actively using it was not so high. In other words, when people are using it, they're using it very actively. So we don't intend to build a complete library again. As it notes in the paper, we actually had a library. We closed it down in 2005. It's probably nothing more dangerous than having a badly resourced library with out-of-date material that you're not on top of, and that's essentially what we ended up with. It wasn't really helping us in our processes. Now that we've moved to, I think, a more of an electronic age in terms of AMA access, then now's the time for us to think about getting somebody in to help us with a lot of our research. We're collecting information for us, collecting papers and so on, and that's what we're intending to do. We're very fortunate as well. Paul Pacht is going to help us a little bit. If anybody knows Paul, he's probably more than anybody else has got access to so much in terms of free resources and other things. He's helping organise our internal research portal for us over the next few months. The other things that we're doing, and I think these are quite fascinating. Since we met last time, we actually put together with Richard Barker from he was at Cambridge, now at Oxford, a research forum where we had around about 20 academics and other research professionals together in the boardroom at the ISB. And I say other research professionals because the professional bodies have got very active research departments often. And so they provide us with some very helpful research and input. You know, I don't want, without picking on individuals, ICAS, the Scottish Institute, produces a lot of material through a research program it has. So does the English Institute and New Zealand and Australia. Others do that. So it's very important to have quite a broad network of people. But I've sensed a really strong, quite growing interest in researchers actually helping us and working with us and actually producing work that they find helpful. And it's not just the professionals in terms of the people from the professional bodies. Among the people there are people like Stephen Penman, who's at Columbia University. He's a well-known academic empirically, and you look at it, you know, the sort of work he publishes and you think he's not interested in practical stuff, but he is. And so we've actually started to attract some mainstream researchers into this sort of network of people. We know that the structures aren't, incentive structures aren't always perfect to get people to do academic research for us, but we're not necessarily asking them to do specific things for us. We think they should just do good, high-quality research, and then we can use these other people, like our research fellows, to draw on it. In other words, to help us interpret it and think about the policy implications. I think the biggest thing we can do is to really encourage people, if they're looking at, you know, three or four different research projects, to pick one that actually happens to be helpful to us in terms of timing. And so, for example, if you're thinking about measurement attributes for the conceptual framework, we need to get that research out very quickly. If we're looking at IFRS 3, and that's business combinations and our post-implementation review, it's very helpful if we know that we've got research coming in about a year's time, because that will feed into our post-implementation review. And we know reasonably well, we can sort of predict out, if you look at our research program, about 2 or 3 years for the types of things where the board will actually start to want to look at research. So a lot of this is actually just about awareness. At the moment, we don't tell researchers what we're interested in. They can't tell looking at our website sometimes, so we're going to remedy that by making sure that they are aware. The other thing that I'll just finish off and then so you'd have a chance to ask questions is we are going to try and hold some special events. I thought it was amusing last time because Mike Bradbury is an academic from New Zealand I've known for a long time, said, well, you should have a session like the FASB has, where they have research academics together every December. And I said, yeah, it is actually a joint conference with us. So it is something that we do together. And, of course, people weren't aware of that because we don't advertise that on our website. It's just lacks transparency. But we have several events that we run that we contribute to. We have board members and staff who contribute to the AAA, the American Accounting Association conferences, the European Accounting Association conferences, and AFANS and Australasia. So we're also looking to develop a special event. Sadly, when Tommaso Padoa-Schioppa passed away, we were trying to think of a way to actually acknowledge the contribution he'd made, and the suggestion was that we have a special speech or annual event to honour him, which there'd be a special speaker. And what we've been looking to do is to combine that with a research forum, where each year, well, in fact, this is in the planning, you've got to think about 18 months to 2 years out, we identify some topics or a topic that is particularly interesting to us that we'd like some research undertaken for. And then we would run annually a special event, sort of a day and a half workshop, where we would have a special speaker to honour Tommaso Padoa-Schioppa, and we would accompany that with something like 6 papers, academic papers that would be focused on work that's really relevant to us. To give it a very special feel to it, one of the things we would ensure that we did was have a panel, perhaps, towards the end, where we discuss the implications of all that research for us as standard setters. That's something that's missing at the moment from a lot of the standard workshops that we see. The good news is that at the moment we've been passing the idea around the academic community and plus a few other people, and we've had very strong support for it. What we're hoping to do is this year, towards the second half of this year, is actually launch the inaugural lecture. The inaugural one will be a little bit different because we haven't got enough time between now and, say, September or October to get academics to produce work for us. So we would just focus it on Tommaso and his contribution, a special speaker, and then perhaps have a couple of special invited speakers to talk about the importance of policy-relevant research. And then we'd follow that up in next year, so around about September 2014, with our first full workshop. And so far, it looks like we're very close to signing up what they call an A-level accounting journal that would actually publish all the proceedings from that. And then the idea would be to take that around the world so that it is would be in Europe one year, perhaps Australasia, the Americas, and so on. So it becomes a truly international event. And we're very close. We've actually got some potential for the 2015 one as well. So we're starting to think quite a long way out and trying to get some real traction in this. So what we've got here is, in some ways, we're being, I think, quite ambitious with some high-profile events, but we're also trying to do this in a way that's not going to cause a major drain on our resources or take our focus off standard setting, but is very supportive to our standard setting processes. So very happy to have feedback on any of the issues in here or other suggestions.
John.
Alan, in the strategy review, the trustees talked about trying to establish a separate funding stream for this. But from what I take from this paper is you've sort of found a way to do quite a lot without needing that. Is that a fair summary? And is there an intention still to seek a separate funding stream?
That's something that's obviously up to the trustees, but I think what's fairly obvious from this is you can do a lot without necessarily a huge amount of money. And I think, you know, if you were to cost this out, you're talking about relatively small percentages of our budget. And I guess you have to question whether it's worth running something as a separate income stream when it's such a small percentage of your budget. The other thing that we're also, I'm with two minds on this, because there's also a concern if you actually run a separate revenue stream for research that you can taint that, because there's a perception that if, let's say, that somebody gave us a large grant, you know, it could be the PwC grant, they'll say, well, that's biased because it's PwC. And while there may be no bias in there, we've seen that often in research areas where people say, well, you use that just to prove what they wanted you to prove. So there's a sense we could taint that. That's not to say that we would turn away opportunities where we could have research fellows, for example, could be funded by a conglomerate or some different people. And similarly, we've got some really good research programs today. We just, a few weeks ago, there's one KPMG support research, and the research papers were presented 2 weeks ago, I think it was, yeah, 2 weeks ago in our offices. And that's a really good example, because we actually suggested quite a few topics related to our post-implementation review of IFRS 3, and we would certainly encourage those as well. So I think it's a matter of, once we've built the framework, then people, if they want to provide separate funding, it's okay. But what we've got so far is something that we think is ambitious enough, but sustainable as well.
If I can add to Alan's point, I think that recommendation was given on the basis of a different set of circumstances way back in a year, more than a year ago. And the circumstances have changed in the last year that put a lot more pressure on our existing resources. So I don't think we can expect to meet the assumptions that were made. I think that we're talking about $49 million million pounds annual budget, which is not nearly the case we are here. And so we will try to extend the existing resources, be as efficient as possible, and still meet the strategic goal of establishing this activity.
see three cards up. I have Joel first, Julie, Anne, and Begona.
Alan, the world's a big place, and ISB, I think, does a lot of great outreach. But I think part of research, I think, would be that would be helpful would be surveys. And the effective use of surveys, I think, could be a really good way to do some outreach as you're dealing with issues. And if done right and in a focused fashion, could be very good research for a project. I was wondering if the remit of the research group would be surveys, as well as the other things you mentioned.
Short answer is yes. The two quick things, though. One is we probably haven't got, we've got limited experience amongst our team to write surveys. I tell you what, you know, I'm an ex-academic. They're not that easy to write, because the first thing you do is get criticised for the way you've expressed your questions. Plus, then you've got, you know, the response rates and so on, and what sort of inferences you get. But surveys are extremely powerful. You just got to make sure you treat them with respect, in a sense, and that they, you know, I guess I'll call it a shallower way of getting feedback, but they're very important as well. And that would be something we'd look at doing, and encouraging others. Very quickly on that as well, we've already identified one of the things that academics can do to help us is one of the first things they often do is descriptive statistics and gather a lot of data before they start to analyse it in a lot of detail. That's actually really helpful to us, so we're going to try and encourage them to give it to us early in their research phase.
Julie.
Just an encouraging comment about exactly what you mean when you say research, because I think you mean it broadly as opposed to the more narrow academic point of view. When I think of it, you know, at one end of the spectrum, the lower end, it's sort of data gathering, you know, about the frequency that something exists or not, its magnitude. And at the highest end, you know, it's proving causation, you know, X causes Y with some degree of confidence. And maybe in the middle is identifying, taking the economic point of view, kind of identifying costs and benefits, you know, in the situation. So it hasn't been 100% clear whether you mean the data gathering, what I'd call more the lower end, you know, what's the incidence of things or the magnitude or lack thereof, or the middle, kind of identifying more economically costs and benefits, or the high end, you know, finding correlations, or at the highest end, finding causation. So just when you talk about it and you're seeking input from others, it might be good to try to make those distinguishments, because I think the word research means different things to different people.
Anne.
Alan, I'm very pleased to hear your response in terms of the funding. My experience with the institutes that I've dealt having research functions in means that I would suggest you don't have a separate funding line just for research, because it then becomes very difficult to extract it, to move it, to shift it around a little bit, as is required in many circumstances. So just a simple thing there. I'd just like also to highlight, you mentioned quality, and I think the one thing that you and the staff would have to do is to be very focused on looking at quality in papers, but also quality in the researchers. I think the assessment of that quality will become critical to the usefulness of your information.
Begonia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I want to talk on behalf of the European Accounting Association in this particular case, and we welcome very much the idea of increasing the role of research in the standard setting process, not only at the beginning but also during the post-implementation review. We think that in developing this network of researchers is useful, is fundamental in order to improve the ISB strategy, but also having a good access to databases is important. We are aware that it's sometimes very difficult to find the adequate papers, because although most of them or many are in SSRN, it's quite a difficult task to identify the relevant papers prior to being published, because you don't know which papers are perhaps the most interesting. And then we offer the help of the Financial Reporting Standards Committee of the European Accounting Associations to help you with this task of well, identifying research or any other thing. We have had a good experience working with Antarctica. That was the researcher that had been working for the post-implementation review in IFRS 8, and we propose to continue working with you in the same with the same idea of identifying good papers that could be helpful. But if we can collaborate with you in any other way, we are open to continue with these activities. Thank you.
Christoph.
Ellen, only a very quick question, considering that the ISB is an international body. Any efforts to avoid a focus only on research that is available in English?
That's a very good question, and the answer is yes. It is difficult because there's some very good research that we know goes on in other languages. What we're hoping to do is through the academic networks, to give you an example, so say New Zealand. Hans always thinks New Zealand's a foreign language, or at least the way I speak it. But there's a New Zealand journal publishes a summary of relevant research every month, and in English, obviously. But we know that those exist in other languages, and so we're trying to see if we can actually establish a network of people who will voluntarily convert those summaries into English for us. And that's because, you know, there might be hundreds of research papers being produced. We're not asking for full translations of those. We want people to feed to us a summary of new or interesting research that's taken place over the last few months. And they exist. It's just that translation. It's the last leg.
Jeff.
Thank you. In the U.S., you know, there has been and there continues to be this great deal of emphasis on cost-benefit analysis, and kind of started with the regulators, but it's really leaking down now to everyone else, including the accounting and auditing standard setters. So last time I looked at this issue about 10 years ago, I did not find that there was really much hope to find any type of generally accepted methodology to evaluate the costs and even more so the benefits to accounting standard setting. As you look at the research coming out now and being worked on, do you see any hope that we will find something that will help us address this issue?
I think they're unrelated questions in a sense, in that I don't know if the research can force people to agree on a methodology, but that's why I mentioned in the prelim to this, we actually have established an effect analysis working group. And the good thing is, just to your left is, I don't know if Julie's going to be the one attending, but I think Paul Beswick's designated as an official observer to that. We've got the SEC involved, and we're trying to get an established methodology that standard setters and regulators around the world will buy into and actually say that these are the types of things you should be looking at. And I think once you've established the methodology, I think you're absolutely right. Then you look for the research that actually helps you with that. And I guess to Julie's point, it's the way I see it often is that the higher level research and all the empirical analysis and so on, that's not going to help you make that many decisions about whether we capitalise interest or not, for example, and what are the real costs of implication of implementing something. We've done a lot of work on the impairment model and talking to the banks about what is actually implementable. To me, that's actually gathering information and data, and we're in a really good position to collect it, so we do that. And that sort of stuff feeds into this effect analysis and explains why we think that this is actually an achievable model. So I think they're two sort of strands in here, and you can't just operate one without the other.
All right. Well, seeing no other cards up, Alan, thank you for that. Research was an item that this council had identified as part of our agenda consultation as an area needing attention, needing a plan, and I think... you've more than responded to that.
At dinner, if you've got any really good ideas, Cheng Wu's the man, because he heads our research committee.
All right, and speaking of dinner, I think unless anyone has something they want to raise now, I want to remind you that dinner is called for 6 o'clock on this level, I assume, where we had lunch. Tomorrow morning, there are breakfast meetings for the investor groups and the emerging markets group. I urge you to attend those sessions. We will resume the public session at 9, and David has kindly agreed that he'll lead off with the discussion of the due process handbook update, and then we'll revert to the agenda as was set out initially. So that's agreeable. Have a pleasant evening. Well, not too pleasant, and we'll see you in working form tomorrow morning.